Parsha Vayetze sees Yaakov leaving the familiar surroundings of home, going to the very unfamiliar surroundings of Lavan's house. And the beginning of the Parsha, we have the famous dream of Yaakov with a ladder. The Pasuk describes in Perek Kavches Pasuk Yudbeis, Vayachalom, Yaakov dreams. Vihine sulam mutzav arza. There's a ladder. Its feet are on the ground, based on the ground. Verosha magia shamayma. The head reaches heavenwards. Vihine malachei elokim olim v'yordim bo. And malachim are going up and down. And, of course, everyone wants to know, what's the dream about? What's the ladder? What's the malachim? And what's the message? It's interesting to note, this dream is not the only dream in the Torah. There are quite a few. But it is the only dream in the Torah where the interpretation of the dream is not in the Torah. Yosef has his dreams, and neither the brothers or Yaakov interpret them. The butler and the baker and Paro, they have their dreams. Yosef interprets them. So at least we get a general orientation as to what the dreams mean. There's still room for the Mefarshim to discuss the finer details. But Yaakov's dream is presented with no pitaron, with no interpretation per se. And that is why we find a number of approaches quite differing from each other among the Mefarshim, Rishonim, and Acharonim. We begin, of course, with Rashi, who comments not so much on the ladder, which perhaps becomes more or less self-explained, but the Malachim themselves, on the words Olim v'Yordim. So Rashi actually begins with a question. What could possibly be questionable about going up and down? Is that not what Malachim do? Well, actually, no. Because although everybody knows what goes up must come down, that's true unless you're a malach, in which case we say what goes down must come up. You begin higher, they descend and then ascend. And Rashi actually considers this to be a difficulty within the Pasuk. We've noted in the past, his grandson, the Rashbam, makes a point of saying that there is no difficulty in the order of Olim v'Yordim, because it means going up and down, and even though it's true that first they would go down and then come up, but you get the general idea, and Rashbam is insistent that we should not make anything of it, even though he's well aware that his grandfather Rashi made a great deal out of it. Rashi comments, Olim t'chila, first going up, v'chakach yordim, that's a deviation from the Seder, the intuitive Seder. And therefore Rashi explains, Malachim, well-known words of Rashi, Malachim shelivuhu ba'aretz, the Malachim that accompany Yaakov in Eretz Yisrael, ein yotzin chutz la'aretz, they will not go to chutz la'aretz. If Yaakov goes, they're not going with him. Where do they go? They'll ascend until further notice. V'alu l'rakia. Now what about that? Does that mean Yaakov will be without Malachim? No. He gets a set of malachim for chutz la'aretz. V'yordu malachi chutz la'aretz l'lavosa. We see that Rashi's response to his question is quite far-reaching. Because if the question was, don't malachim first come down and then go up? The answer is, yes, but we're dealing with actually two sets of malachim. The malachim went up were not the same as the malachim that came down. The ones that went up were the ones who were with him already in Eretz Yisrael. They are olim. New Malachim are now Yordim to accompany him in Chutz La'aretz. And it's worthwhile noting, I believe, that Rashi's interpretation of the dream and what the Malachim represent, it's fair to say that this is relevant to Yaakov, but it's not exclusive to Yaakov. It's not specific to Yaakov as an individual. As if to say, Rashi is describing the situation for anyone who is accompanied by Malachim. that in Eretz Yisrael they'll have a certain set, and in Chutz La'aretz another set, and when they leave, there is what we used to call the changing of the guard. What that means is, this has been experienced beforehand. When Avram left Eretz Yisrael, or when he came to Eretz Yisrael, there was the changing of the sets of Malachim. It's true that Avram had no such dream because we're not aware of him significantly sleeping at the transitional point that he would have a dream. But we may posit that if he did, if he fell asleep on the way, on the border from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, he would have had a similar dream because the same thing is true for him. Which means that Yaakov's dream is true for Yaakov, but not only for Yaakov. Anyone who would be like Yaakov, those malachim would switch. Which is, I believe, a pertinent observation. In the Medrash, we find a different interpretation, which actually addresses what the Sulam is. Two interpretations, in fact. Some say this is in the Bereishis Rabbah. Some say that the ladder is about the future. It's about Har Sinai. The Medrash makes the point that Sinai and Sulam have a similar gematria. And Yaakov is being told about the giving of the Torah. You have Har Sinai, that's the ladder. Who are the Malachei Elohim Olim V'Yordim Bo? Says the Medrash, that's Moshe and Aaron. Moshe and Aaron are Malachei Elohim, and they go up Sinai and down Sinai. It's about Matan Torah. It's about the future. It's interesting, again, to note that when we think of Sinai and we think of anyone going up Sinai or down Sinai, we only ever think of one person, and that's Moshe Rabbeinu. We don't normally factor Aaron into the equation because he, even if he went up to a certain degree, he didn't go up as high as Moshe Rabbeinu did. And nonetheless, fundamentally, Aaron is also in the picture, and he is one of the Malachei Elohim, Olim to the degree that he did, and Yordim to the degree that he did, as well as Moshe. So that's one future interpretation of the ladder. The ladder is Sinai, the Malachei Elohim are Moshe and Aaron. In a different interpretation, also with a view to the future, the Medrash says that it's a reference to the Beis HaMikdash. That's the Sulam. The Sulam is the Mizbeach. And what happens with the Mizbeach, as we know, that's where the Korbanos are brought. And you have Malachei Elohim, Olim V'Yordim. That is a reference to the Kohanim. They go up the Mizbeach, and then they come down from the Mizbeach. That's the second interpretation of the Medrash. And also here, it's interesting to wonder. Yaakov has a dream about the future. His descendants, they will receive the Torah, and they will do the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. Quite so. But that's true not only for Yaakov's descendants. It's true also for Yitzhak's descendants and for Avram's descendants. I mean, for all three of them, their descendants will receive the Torah and have the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, it's interesting to wonder why it was that Yaakov had this dream, and no one else ever had this dream beforehand. Avram could also see the ladder. I mean, whoever is descended from Yaakov that will receive the Torah is also descended from Avram, and so to Yitzhak in the middle. I wonder, perhaps, whether we may suggest that it wasn't until Yaakov that these events could be seen in a dream. For the Mefarshim tell us that when we talk about seeing the future in a dream, and the Gemara famously says in the ninth parak of Brachas that a dream is like a 60th of Nevuah, it's possible to have an elements of a prophecy there in a dream. But prophecy itself, and by extension a dream, it's perhaps not entirely accurate to talk about them as seeing the future, but rather they're seeing the present. That is to say, as Mefarshim explained, everything that ultimately happens here in our realm has already begun to happen. It's an emanation of events that are transpiring and occurring in higher realms. And then they filter down and trickle down and emanate and become the events as we experience them. In a sense, the vision of a Navi is not so much that he can see the future, but he can see what's happening now. He just has access to see those higher realms. Lahavdil. If one has access to an X-ray, he can look at a person's teeth and say when their wisdom teeth will be coming through. He's not a Navi. He can't tell the future. What he's seeing is the present. He can then project how it will then make its way into visible reality in the future. And it's a fascinating perspective, really, on what dreams are about, because they represent a reality already. It's just a question of that reality filtering down into lower realms. And that's why many things can affect how that reality expresses itself. The Gemara says there in the ninth parak of Brachos that the way that one interprets a dream can affect the dream. And as the Ramam Ipanu, Menachem Ipanu explains, because it's almost like the energy of the dream can yet be channeled and harnessed, and the way that one receives it and formats it and shapes it through the interpretation can affect the way that energy expresses itself. That's why there is a concept of hatovas chalom, which the Gemara talks about. If a person has had a dream that he thinks is a very bad dream, or it scares him, he can actually try somehow to turn it into a good dream. Hofachta mispedi lemacholi. He can swerve or divert the energy of the dream from heading towards a bad place and allow it to somehow end up in a good place. This, in fact, is something that we refer to. I'm not sure if we pay that close attention to it, but during Duchening, in the Shalosh Regalim, there is a paragraph that the Tzibur says, just when the Kohanim are humming and singing, called Refuas Chalom, whereby the person says, I've had a dream, Chalom Chalamti, Ve'en Yodea Mahu. If it's a good dream, in Tovim Heim, Chazkeim Va'am Seim, strengthen my dreams. What does it mean to strengthen a dream? It's a vision of the future. How can it be strengthened? And if it's no good, Rifa'im, heal my dreams, like you healed Chizkiah, and like you healed Miriam from Saras. We're talking about the dream as an entity that can yet be treated and given a good outcome, or strengthen its outcome, or change its outcome. And this is a very, very interesting perspective on the way that Chazal and the Mefarshim, classic Mefarshim, view the entire concept called a dream. A Navi is called a Chozer. He's a seer, because his vision is deeper than others. He sees elements of the future already in the present, to some degree. And therefore, it could be that, as we've mentioned on a number of occasions, the Medrash tells us that the Shechina, which was originally imminent in the world, departed successively to higher and higher levels, and was more and more distant as a result of the chet of Adam HaRishon, and Cain, and Sodom, and Mitzrayim. And then the Avos began to bring it back. And Avram brought it closer, and then Yitzhak brought it closer, and Yaakov closer still, and that continued. But it could be, therefore, that the proximity of that energy that will lead to these future possibilities, like the giving of the Torah and the Beis HaMikdash, that wasn't yet material enough to be perceived in a dream. It wasn't yet enough of a reality on any level in the present at the time of Avram and Yitzhak, because they were still in the process of bringing it closer. It wasn't until Yaakov, the third of the Avos, had brought it closer enough, it passed the threshold, that it could already be perceived within, and a dream had traction with these ideas. And that's why Yaakov sees these, where Yitzhak and Avram before him did not. So far, for Rashi, it's about being accompanied by Malachim, which is true of any tzaddik. For the Medrash, it's about the future. It's the Ramban who actually explains that this is specifically and personally true for Yaakov, specifically, exclusively. Ramban explains that the ladder represents the steps of interaction between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and people. And generally speaking, says Ramban, HaKadosh Baruch Hu interacts with the world through Malachim. He quotes a number of psukim, that it's not so much a direct reaction, but Hashem sends Malachim, and then Malachim, they bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wishes and execute his demands in the world, and then they return again. That's true generally, which means what the ladder represents is the state of the world for most people. And then, in the next pasuk, there is a chiddush that is unique to Yaakov, which states, V'hine Hashem nitzav alav. But behold, which is always an expression of chiddush, V'hine, behold, Hashem nitzav alav. Hashem is standing over Yaakov, meaning directly over Yaakov. And this is a unique situation for Yaakov, whereby HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying to him that I will not be interacting with you through Malachim, but rather I will be standing over you direct. V'hine anochi imach, I will be with you. Ushmaticha b'chol asher telech, I'll guard you wherever you go. There will not be nothing in between, even spiritual elements in between. It will be an absolute direct relationship. So it's very interesting because according to the Ramban, the ladder, it relates to Yaakov, but specifically because it's not about Yaakov. It's about everyone else except for Yaakov, because Yaakov has this B'nei Hashem Nitzav Alav. And it occurred to me that these words of Ramban are themselves a chiddush. And the reason why is because Yaakov is on his way from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz. And that, in the words of none other than the Ramban, generally makes for more interference, so to speak, between the person and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's specifically in Eretz Yisrael that you have that direct relationship, and in Chutz La'aretz, there's whatever the Mefarshim call them, and however we understand them, there's Mazalos, and there's Sarim, and there's all sorts of entities in between. It's a less direct relationship. That's generally, and Ramban quotes often the Gemara in the end of Maseches Ksubas, which states rather startlingly that a person who lives in Eretz Yisrael, kimishi yeshlo eloka, it's as if he has a god. A person who lives in Chutz La'aretz, kimishi einlo eloka, it's like he doesn't have a god. And Ramban explains that Judaism is a global religion for Jews, but what it means is that the imminence and the directness of the relationship only exists within Eretz Yisrael. Kimi sheyesh lo aloka. Once it's in Chutz La'aretz, it filters down through various other forces and mazalos, etc. That is the classic situation. Ironically here, Yaakov is being promised that he will be given a direct relationship with no even malachim in between, and that's specifically when he's going from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, which, if we set this against the backdrop of the other comments of Ramban, is a major chiddush of all places. Chutz La'aretz is when one expects things to get more indirect. Rather, for Yaakov, it will remain direct. And I wonder whether we may use this idea of the Ramban to perhaps reopen a question that we ended with last week, namely, the issue of the Avos keeping Taryag Mitzvahs, even before the Torah was given. We noted that the Ramban's approach to this is that they kept the Taryag Mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael, but when they're in Chutz La'aretz, they did not necessarily keep Taryag Mitzvahs. And the reason is because of the nature of Eretz Yisrael, and because of the unique relationship that exists between people and HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Eretz Yisrael. It demands Taryag Mitzvahs, even if they haven't formally been commanded, if you can intuit what they are. And yet we noted that Rashi tells us from the Medrash that when Yaakov says to Esav when he comes back, Im lavan garti, he means to indicate, garti is Taryag, Taryag Mitzvah Shamarti. Yaakov, in principle, has been keeping Taryag Mitzvahs, even with Lavan, and Lavan is in Chutz La'aretz. And that, for us, represented a problem with the Ramban's thesis that there is no concept of Taryag in Chutz La'aretz. And we suggested one possibility last week, but I wonder whether in light of this Ramban, even though he himself doesn't say this, perhaps for Yaakov it was important to keep Taryag to the extent that he could, even in Chutz La'aretz, because the relationship that generally only exists in Eretz Yisrael, that direct relationship, has been promised to Yaakov in Chutz La'aretz, and therefore he will be looking to preserve it and enhance it and protect it through keeping Taryag wherever he may be. So these are some of the classic explanations of what the Sulam represents. We have Rashi, we have the Medrash, we have Ramban, and one or two comments with regards to each of them. So when Yaakov wakes up, the Pasuk tells us in the Pasuk Kaf, he takes a vow, Vayidar Yaakov neder lemor. And his vow is, Im yeh Elokim imadi, if Hashem will be with me, Ushmarani baderech hazeh asher anochi olech, and he will guard me wherever I go, v'nasani lechem leechol, u'begadol b'shem, and take care of my basic needs, food and clothing, v'shavti b'shalom abeis avi, v'hayo Hashem li l'elokim. And I will return in peace to my father's house, Hashem will be to me as a God. For even as those asher samti matzeva, yeh beis elokim. And this stone, which I've just set up as a matzeva, a mizbeach of sorts, will be the basis of Hashem's house, beis elokim. Now, it's interesting if we follow Yaakov's words with Rashi's comments to explain why Yaakov mentions these things specifically. So beginning with, in Pasuk Kaf, Im yelo kim imadi, if Hashem will be with me. And Rashi explains how all the things that Yaakov is mentioning are things that Hashem mentioned. Yaakov says, if Hashem will be with me, because Hashem says, Vihine anochi imach, I will be with you. And Ushmarani, he'll protect me, as it says, Ushmaticha, and I'll protect you. And then, V'nosani lechem lechol, and Begid Lubosh, Rashi explains how Hashem's words also incorporate those things that he will provide for his basic needs. And then, v'shavti b'shalom, I will return in peace. And according to Rashi, this is still part of the im, if Hashem will be with me and protect me, and I will come back, b'shalom. And Rashi says, on the words b'shalom, in peace, shalem min hachet, whole from sin, shelo elmad bidarchei lavan, that I won't learn from the ways of Lavan. And this comment of Rashi actually drew the attention of many Mefarshim, because until now, everything that Yaakov is talking about is very temporal, shall we say. His needs, affection, food, clothing, gashmias. And yet, when he says v'shavti b'shalom, which is still part of what he hopes will happen, Rashi at that point takes it to a transcendent level, that it's about wholeness from sin, that I won't learn from Lavan. And in a sense, we may ask, well, why did Rashi change the plane of what Yaakov is referring to? Isn't there a simpler understanding of shalom? Isn't he in trouble? Isn't he in danger? Esau wants to kill him. Who knows what's waiting for him with Lavan? Perhaps shalom means what shalom sounds like it means, that I'll just come back in one piece, unharmed, unscathed. So why does Rashi take what seems to be the less intuitive and less immediate understanding of what Yaakov means when he talks about shalom? And a fascinating answer to this question came out from an episode that's recorded by the Torah Tamima, Baruch HaLevi Epstein. In addition to writing the Torah Tamima and another 5-volume work on Torah called Tosefes Bracha, also wrote a 2,000-page autobiography called Mekor Baruch. And it's an amazing window, really, into his own experiences and just to what the world was like in Velosh and Yeshiva and elsewhere. Of course, it's full of Divrei Torah. Rarely do you have a biography that has a 70-page index of Torah sources that have been discussed throughout the work. So this is not your normal memoirs. But he tells at one stage, and he learned in the Velozhin Yeshiva, the Netziv was his uncle, and he was traveling back home, and he found his way to an inn somewhere, and kind of settled down for the night. Except, shortly afterwards, there was a commotion in the inn, because it transpired that none other than Rabbi Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik, the Beis Halevi, who was also a Rosh Hashiva in Volozhin, was passing through the town, and he'd also checked into that inn. Well, as you can appreciate, as soon as word got out in this town that the Beis Halevi, the Rosh Hashiva Volozhin, was staying in an inn, that became a very busy place. Everyone converged upon that inn, and there was a whole Kabbalas Panim, and people wanted to say hello to the Beis HaLevi and to greet him and get a bracha from him. And he sat down and he was receiving people. And at one point, one of his former Talmidim from the Volozhin Yeshiva who lived in that town came to visit. So the Beis HaLevi was delighted. I mean, he hadn't seen him for a while already, a number of years. And he sat him down next to him. And this person had left Yeshiva, gone to visit his father. And Beis HaLevi is talking and discussing and responding. And he turns to his former Talmud at a certain point and says, "No, so tell me. What's Machman? What do you do?" So the Talmud, and he'd been a few years, so the Talmud says to the Beis HaLevi, "Well, you know, I left Yeshiva and I'm in the sugar business with my father." And the Beis HaLevi didn't respond, which is a bit unusual, slightly awkward, but okay, and doesn't ask. And he carried on conversing with other people. A few minutes later, he turned to this Talmud again and says, "No, so tell me, what do you do?" So the Talmud was slightly taken aback here. It wasn't sure what to do, but Chalza, you know, the Rosh Yeshiva asked, so he says, "I left Yeshiva, I went into the sugar business with my father." And the Beis HaLevi ignored him again. So it was getting a little bit uncomfortable. And finally, after talking to one or two other people, the Beis HaLevi turns back to him and says, "No, so tell me, what do you do?" At this point, he just wasn't sure what he was doing anymore. But he had no choice. He just repeated, "Maybe the Rosh Yeshiva didn't hear him, or I'm in the sugar business with my father." And at this point, the Beis HaLevi says, "Okay, I've asked you the same question three times, and you've gotten the wrong idea all three times. That constitutes in halacha what's called a chazaka. That means that you're not going to get the idea. But let me explain. I know that you're in the sugar business with your father. But we have a principle, which the Gemara states, Hakol bidei shamayim, chutz miyiras shamayim. Everything really is in the hands of heaven. Except for yiras shamayim, except for your mitzvahs and your Torah. If I wanted to know what business you were in, I wouldn't ask you, what do you do? I would ask you, what does Hashem do for you? And then you can say, he provides a sugar business for me. But I asked what you do. And what you do is none of that. What you do are the things that only you can do, which is your Yiddishkeit and your Torah and your mitzvahs. And the Torah Tamima, who was present, a young bacher at the time, he was overwhelmed by this story, deeply impacted by it. Such a profound lesson that everybody knows until you hear the Beis HaLevi say it, and then it takes on a different dimension. But being the Torah Tamima, he didn't just hear the story, appreciate it, and move on. In the tradition of Gedolei Yisrael, or budding Gedolei Yisrael, he then went through a Torah scan to see if anything else now changed as a result of this story. And then says Torah Tamima, "It occurred to me, that's the pshat in the Rashi in Vayetze." "What's Rashi in Vayetze?" Says Torah Tamima, "Let's go back to our psukim. Yaakov has been saying, if Hashem will be with me, and Ushmarani, Venasani lechaleva, and then the Shavti b'shalom," and Rashi all of a sudden says, "You know what shalom means? It means shalim minachet." And all Mefarshim ask, "Well, maybe shalom just means insecurity." So the Torah Tamima says, but based on what I heard from the Beis HaLevi there, if you look at the psukim, you'll see that they've shifted, because the earlier ims are all in the causative. If Hashem will be with me, and He will protect me, and He will give me, benosani lechem lechol, ubeged lilvosh. But then, in Pasuk Kaf Aleph, it shifts to the first person. B'shavti b'shalom, I will return, says the Torah Tamima. So Rashi's wondering, if Hashem has been doing everything for you until now, then surely it should have said, Veheshivani b'shalom el beis avi. But the answer is, Yaakov is talking about something else. If it's talking about Hashem bringing him back, b'shalom would be Hashem take care of his situation. But if he shifts to v'shavti b'shalom, I will come back, that means he must be referring to an element of him returning that's only up to him. And that's how he conducts himself. That's whether he learns from Lavan. And that's why if it's v'shavti, then b'shalom must be shalim minachet. a truly wonderful interpretation of the Rashi generated by that story with the Beis Halevi. There is another point, interestingly, B'shavti b'shalom, that many, it's a favorite question amongst the Mefarshim, and important to be on top of all of these things. The Gemara states, in the end of Maseches Brachos, that when you take leave of someone, there's a way to take leave of them, and a way not to take leave of them. The Gemara says, Hanifta mechaveiro, don't say to him, Lech b'shalom. Say, Lech l'shalom. That's the way. Why? Says the Gemara, because, consider, when Moshe took leave of Yisro in Parshas Shemos, so Yisro says to him, Lech l'shalom. And says the Gemara, well, and look what became of Moshe. Olav in his gadol. He became Moshe Rabbeinu. That's the way to launch a person. That's the way to take leave of someone. Lech l'shalom. By contrast, when Avshalom left David in Sefer Shmuel, he said to him, Lech b'shalom. And Holach v'nitla b'saro, he ended up and he got hanged from the tree there. It came to a bad end. Now, of course, the Gemara itself is very interesting because presumably it does not mean to say that the entire success of Moshe is thanks to Yisro saying, Lech l'shalom. And the disastrous end of Avshalom is entirely to be put down to David saying, Lech b'shalom. Not so. But nonetheless, each one went in a drastically different direction, and it's important to take note of all of the elements that that led towards that. Auspicious happenings are launched by auspicious statements. And therefore, Mefarshim asked the Pardes Yosef, Yaakov says, V'shavti b'shalom el beis avi. We know that that's an ill-advised formula. One shouldn't say b'shalom, one should say l'shalom. And why is it that he said b'shavti b'shalom? And the classic answer that's offered by the Mefarshim is really to open up the question, what's the difference between l'shalom and b'shalom? I mean, I can think of worse things to say than either of those two things. L'shalom and b'shalom, they're largely the same, but not exactly the same. The Ein Yaakov explains, the difference between them is that as long as a person is alive, so they have the possibility to continue to grow and to develop themselves, the letter Lamed has a connotation of moving towards something in the future. L'shalom means there's still more to do. B'shalom means it's done. With not looking forward to anything, but what, everything that one has is already there. At that point, that doesn't bode well for a person to stay in this world. And therefore one always says l'shalom, always looking towards the future, better things in the future, as opposed to saying everything is done. And therefore, says Pardes Yosef, if that's true generally, then don't forget. Here, when Yaakov says v'shavti b'shalom, but Rashi explained to us that b'shalom means, I hope that when I return, I will not have learnt from Lavan. That is to say, he's specifically talking about retaining vis-a-vis his stay with Lavan, coming back here, looking back, he will see his time with Lavan, that he didn't learn from him. And therefore, it really is called b'shalom, because that's really the focus of what he's talking about. When I come back in however many years' time, looking back on my time with Lavan, I want it to be b'shalom, that I retained my state and didn't learn from Lavan. Okay. And Mefarshim continue to ask, because these words can be turned over from so many different angles. Rashi says, Shole min hachet, shelo elmat mi Lavan. My hope is that I will be whole from sin. Min hachet. And Mefarshim ask, is Yaakov referring to any particular chet? Shole min hachet? Or is he referring to chet generally? After all, Lavan presumably is proficient in any number of sins. And perhaps Yaakov doesn't want to learn from Lavan any of them. What does he mean when he says shole min hachet? But the Maskila David explains that actually the definite article, the Hei Hayadiya, is that Yaakov has a specific chet that he sincerely hopes to be protected from Lavan. And that is the chet of being devious, of being dishonest, because on the one hand, Yaakov's specialty is Titin Emes LeYaakov. He had some traumatic departures from that as there was in last week's Parsha, but his essential principle is that of Emes LeYaakov. Lavan, on the one hand, as we've already seen, he's called Lavan, says the Medrash Rabbah, Meluban Beresha. He can whitewash anything. He can take the worst thing and turn it into the best thing. He can commit the worst crime and he'll receive prizes and accolades for it. He has Talmidim in that regard. But Lavan is the original. And therefore, Yaakov is treading a fine line here. Because he knows that Lavan is devious. In fact, this is something that he says from the very beginning, from the outset. When he meets Rachel, as Rashi tells us, he told Rachel, Ki achi avihahu, he's her father's brother, v'chi ben Rivkahu, and he's Rivka's son. Which is very interesting because while they're both true, they're actually two ways of saying exactly the same thing. He's only her father's brother because he's Rivka's son. Those aren't two separate things. Number one, we're related. Number two, I'm his sister's son. That's how you're related. What then does Yaakov mean by saying these two things? Rashi tells us famously that what Yaakov is saying is, I know your father. I know he's tricky. So I just want you to know that if he's tricky, I can be tricky like him. I can be his brother, achiv beramaos, if need be. If he wants to be kosher, which is always possible, I can also be kosher. I'm Rivka's son. So according to Rashi, and it's from actually the Gemara in Maseches Megillah, Achi Aviha and Ben Rivka are the two possibilities. He walks into Lavan's house knowing that Lavan is tricky. And he may also need to use his own resources to survive there. But what's critical for him is that he doesn't retain that characteristic of Lavan when he leaves Lavan's house. Sometimes when dealing with someone who's dishonest, one also needs to assume a certain aspect of cunning. But that's also situation dependent. With Lavan, perhaps one needs it to survive. But outside of Lavan, Yaakov doesn't want any of that to stay with him. And in fact, we're mindful here of a most profound comment of the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, who notes, here's Yaakov, and Yaakov's saying, if he's tricky, I can be tricky. And if he wants to be kosher, I can also be Ben Rivka. But if we look at the Parsha, we'll see that Yaakov never really was as tricky as Lavan. He kind of allowed himself to get outsmarted a little bit. So whatever became of his Achiv Beramos, it's a big thing. But we never really found that he matched Lavan. Says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, that's correct. And ultimately, heaven forbid that he should match Lavan in terms of being tricky and slippery like that. Because he doesn't want to be Lavan. It's true that he says he's Achiv Beramos. That means that he can match wits with Lavan in terms of his survival. But in a sense, unlike perhaps the way we understood until now, these two aspects of being Lavan's brother and Rivka's son, they're not two alternative paths. I can either take the Lavan path or the Rivka path. They're both true. They exist together. In other words, the full message is, I can match him, but I'm not going to become him. Because I'm also Rivka. I'm also the son of Rivka. And being the son of Rivka, I will not allow myself to become like him. I'm sure there's plenty of opportunities that I could trick him more than he tricked me. But I don't want to become him. I'm the son of Rivka. And I have to keep that in mind as I try and engage him and survive and do well with him. It's a very important comment, I believe. Because I think it's true for all time, and certainly in our times. One could almost say that the art of Yisrael amongst the nations is to, on the one hand, be Achiv Beramos, to be as cunning as them, while at the same time being the son of Rivka, never losing that sense that there's a certain level below which we can't allow ourselves to go, even though that would be the full matching of wits. But we're Ben Rivka. We have a legacy, a tradition of standards, and therefore that ultimately we'll need to find the middle ground, which is something that there remains a struggle, but it's a noble struggle. And heaven forbid that we should define success in being absolutely as cunning as them. At any rate, what we do see is, and we've spent a good few moments on these opening sukkim, there's so much here, is that Yaakov really does see that Hashem's protection of him is not guaranteed. Because the critical word that he begins in his neder is the word im. If Hashem will be with me and protect me, if all of that, then I'll be worthy, then whatever will come out of that. But it's very interesting that Yaakov doesn't take Hashem's words of protection, promise of protection, as a definite, as unconditional. Rather, he's saying, well, maybe yes, maybe no, if it will be. But why is he unsure? Well, perhaps intuitively he knows that he can't rely absolutely on this. He has to be worthy of it, perhaps. But the Maskil of David says that if we look carefully, we will see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's promise was phrased to a degree conditionally. It was not given unconditionally. Because Hashem's words to Yaakov begin actually in Pasuk Yud Gimel and carry on in Pasuk Yud Daled, Zaracha Kafaretzu Faratzta, and Pasuk Tesvav. V'hineh nochi imach, I'll be with you. Ushmarticha b'chol eshetelech. I will guard you wherever you go. Vashivosicha v'ladom azos, I'll bring you back to this land. Ki lo ezovcha, I will not release my protection of you. Ad asher im asisi es asher dibarti lach. Which we would translate those words. I won't let you go again until I've done everything. Meaning I'll see it through. Don't worry. But if you look at those words, ad asher im asisi, there seems to be a dual phraseology here. Because the word im can mean when. Like im yeh hayovel. And the word im can mean for definite. When. But that's what the word asher means. Asher means when. Like asher. Which means the pasuk didn't need the word im. Hashem could have said, I will stay with you ad asher asisi until I've done everything that I said. But he added the word im. And once you've said asher, then the word im really does mean if. Which means, I will stay with you if. And that if is what Yaakov begins with his words, im yiyeh elokim imadi, because he understands that it is to a degree dependent on him retaining his spiritual level to be deserving of those promises. That's he's carrying that, responding to that word im from Hashem. But the Malbim, and with this will in a sense close a circle, the Malbim takes us back to the ladder. And the Malbim says, if you wish to know why or how Yaakov knows that Hashem's promises of protection are not unconditional, they may happen, but they might not happen, im yiyeh elokim imadi, it's because that's the message in the dream. That's what the ladder is about. And the Malbim brings the ladder all the way back to Yaakov himself. In fact, the Zohar Kodesh says on the words Vihine Sulam, Sulam do Yaakov. Yaakov himself is the ladder. But what does that mean? Well, Yaakov is leaving in a state. There's a lot to be afraid of. Milfanai Lavan, Miacharai Esav, and who knows who else is going to join in between. And Hashem appears to him to tell him how he should be viewing things. He shows him the ladder. The ladder is Yaakov. Hashem says, here's the ladder. I'm on top. What connects us? Malachi Elokim. Olim v'yordim. If Malachim go up, Malachim will come down. That is to say, what Malachim go up? There are Malachim that are generated by a person. Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos, when a person does a mitzvah and does a good deed, creates a Malach. And those malachim go up. And when those malachim go up, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends malachim down. That's why it's first up, then down. Really what Hashem is saying is, there's only one thing, ultimately, that you need to be worried about. You don't need to be worried about Esav, and you don't need to be worried about Lavan. You need to be focused on one thing. Or do you have Malachim going up? Because if you do, Malachim will come down. And if they come down, then you're protected by me, and you don't have to worry about anybody else. But that's an if, because what goes down is dependent on what comes up. And therefore, that's the whole message of the ladder, according to the Malbim. Certainly Yaakov, when he makes his vow, begins with the word im. It's absolutely conditional on the Malachim going up from Yaakov's mitzvahs. He hopes that that will be the case. Im yelokim imadi, etc. and so forth. So these are some perspectives on the beginning of the parsha. As we can appreciate, plenty more to say on the ladder of Yaakov. But for now, let's just move towards a later section in the parsha, Rachel and Leah. And as we know, Yaakov was originally intending only to marry Rachel, but then he marries Leah, and then he also marries Rachel. And Leah has children first, and then it says, Vatikane Rachel ba'achosa. Rachel is jealous. And what's she jealous of? Well, it's not just basic jealousy. There's something about what's happening between Yaakov and Leah, which the Avos and the Imaros are aware of. They're presenting, or they are preparing the future of the Jewish people. Any child born to Yaakov is part of the future of the Jewish people. Leah is having children. She's had four children, and Rachel's not having any children. I mean, that means that there will be no contribution from her to the future of the Jewish people. And that's unacceptable for her. She says very strongly to Yaakov, "I am Mesa Anochi." It can't be. And what's interesting to note, as Reb Leib Hyman Zatzal of Bayit Vegan points out, if we survey carefully, we will see that every significant institution or aspect of the Jewish people is based on a partnership from B'nai Leah and B'nai Rachel. Even though sometimes it might not look like that until one broadens one's perspective or follows it through. For example, Torah itself. Well, Torah Tzivalonu Moshe, the one outstanding individual who brought us the Torah is Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe is from the tribe of Levi. Levi is from the sons of Leah. And that's that. So it sounds like the center of Judaism, which is in the Torah, with the conduit for that was the B'nai Leah enterprise. And yet, says Rav Hyman, it's very interesting to note that in terms of a further dimension or emanation, it's actually B'nai Rachel that collaborated here and played their part. The famous Gemara, Masechta Shabbos, that originally, to a degree, we were forced to receive the Torah. Kof aleim esahar kegigis. There's something missing, apparently, in our original Naaseh v'Nishma. Well, when was that filled in? When was the Kabbalah Satorah of the Jewish people finally complete? Says Rava in the Gemara there. It's a little early for Purim. Hadar kiblua bimea Achashverosh. Subsequently, the full Kabbalah Satorah was in the time of Achashverosh. Through an understanding and appreciation of how Hashem interacts with the world, through that Esther miracle, B'nai Yisrael absolutely signed on for the Torah. That Kabbalah Satorah was brought about through Mordechai and Esther. They're from Binyamin. That's B'nai Rachel. So the final, or the full expression of Kabbalah Satorah was aided by B'nai Rachel. And moreover, in the very beginning of Pirkei Avos, we find that there are two individuals mentioned, and each one, again, and that means they have a very special role to play. Moshe kibal Torah miSinai, but of all of the B'nai Yisrael, who was judged as most worthy to be his Talmud, and the one who carried on, Umesora, the Yoshua. Yoshua is from Ephraim, from Shevet Yosef. That's B'nai Rachel. So Moshe giving to Yoshua, and then Yoshua then spreads it to all of B'nai Yisrael. Similarly, in the realm of Malchus, which is its own discussion, we know that ultimately Malchus is in the domain of Yehuda, who's the son of Leah. And yet, the first Malchus actually did not begin. Malchus does not begin with Leah. It began with Shaul from Binyamin. And Binyamin, once again, is Bnei Rachel. And even in terms of the future, although we talk of Mashiach, and Mashiach is Mashiach ben David, but there's another Mashiach, right? Mashiach ben Yosef, who's discussed a lot in the Mefarshim. Once again, it's the full Geula is the collaboration on the part of Bnei Leah and Bnei Rachel. With regards to the Beis HaMikdash, which again is the center of Avodah, well, originally, who was the overseer of the building of the Mishkan? It was Bezalel. Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur lematei Yehuda. Quite so. And yet, he had a partner. And his partner was Ahaliyav ben Achisamach lematei Dan. And Dan belonged to the camp of Rachel. So that partnership, interestingly, is twinning now the kochos of Bezalel from the side of Leah and Ahaliyav from the side of Rachel. And moreover, as we follow it through, and here we're being guided by Rav Hyman, who all of these sources open before him, when it comes to the actual Beis HaMikdash, well, the first Beis HaMikdash built by Shlomo HaMelech, so Shlomo is Ben David, so he's from Shevet Yehuda, that's again Bnei Leah, and yet the prime personality who helped him was someone called Chiram. Now this is Chiram of Tzur. It's commonly assumed that this Chiram wasn't Jewish, because if he's from Tzur, and if Tzur means what we think about in Tzur, which is up there in Lebanon, so that's not a place for a Jewish boy. But if you look at the Psukim, you will see that actually this Tzur was a place in Eretz Yisrael, and Chiram is, his lineage is traced. For in Malachim it says, Malachim Aleph, Perek Zion, it says that this Chiram was from the tribe of Naphtali. Yeah, and then, interestingly, because very often events that are described earlier, so to speak, in Nevi'im, are then re-described in Divrei Hayomim. And in Divrei Hayomim, Beis, Perek Beis, it says that he was descended from Dan. And Rashi explains that, as is often the case, the two are harmonized, that it means his mother was from Naphtali, his father was from Dan, or vice versa. He really claims descent from both. But both Dan and Naphtali, once again, are from that side of Rachel. That's where Chiram comes from. And what's interesting is, Rashi there himself voices this point openly. These are his words. In Divrei Hayomim, Beis, Perek Beis, Pasuk Yud Gimel. I'll admit, I didn't start from the beginning, but this is the Rashi that we need. Imo Midan, the Aviv Minaftali. This Chiram says Rashi harmonizing the Psukim from, pardon me, Shmuel, Sefer Shmuel, and Divrei Hayomim. Says Rashi, Zeu Shakosuv. This is what Rachel means when she begins to have children, first through Bilha, and then ultimately herself. She calls them Danani Elokim, Hashem judged me as being worthy of having children. Naftulei Elokim, meaning I did whatever it took. I was persistent to bring children to Yaakov and the future of the Jewish people. Akmumimus Asisi, I did whatever it took. Ad she'ani yecholu ledamus atmi leleya achosi, until I'm able to compare myself and have a corresponding contribution to the Jewish people. Im Leah tispe'er beBetzalel bino, this is Rashi's words, if Leah should take pride in her son Betzalel, she'yasa mishkan, yitztarech lishtatef b'malachto echad mibnei Dan. So I will also have a part in that, who we mentioned before, v'ito es ahaliyah ben achisamach lamatei Dan. V'im Shlomo ben achosi yivne beis hamikdash, and if Shlomo, the son of my sister, which he was, Shlomo ben David from Yehuda, from Leah, Sarat lishtatef imo mibnei Dan u'naftali. So Rashi's monitoring all of this and telling us that it was of the essence that the second contributing personality to the Beis HaMikdash was Chiram, descended both from Dan and Naphtali, from the side of Rachel. And indeed, we see that Rachel's goal is to be a contributing side, because Rachel's midah, she's one of the imahos, right? The Jewish people will need Rachel, an admixture of Rachel in every enterprise, not just from Leah. Rachel and Leah between them represent that the whole generation. Indeed, we may say, and with this many point out, and Rav Hyman concludes, this is actually the bracha that was given to Boaz when he got married in Megillas Rus, in Perek Dalet. And the bracha was, they said, this is right at the end, Yitena semesh Hashem es ha'isha, habol beisecha, may Hashem provide the wife who's coming to your house, k'rochel ukeleah, she should be like Rochel and Leah, asher bonu shtehen es beis Yisrael, who between them built the house of Israel. So it's very interesting that as we go further on through the Chumash, and moreover further on through Nevi'im, and even further than that into Ksuvim, we see emanations of the partnership and collaboration of Rachel and Leah, which begins, the roots of which are in Parshas Vayetze, with the birth of the Shvatim themselves. We'll leave it over there.